Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to this month's Living with Parkinson's meetup. I'm Chris Krueger, Program Manager for Educational Content with the Davis Finney Foundation. And like our panelists, I also live with Parkinson's, having been diagnosed in March of 2020. And I'm just really excited to be here with the panelists and everybody that's viewing this webinar today for another meetup. So before we get started with our topic for today, I just want to ask our panel to introduce themselves and maybe share something about the last time their experience of Parkinson's surprised them somehow. There's a lot of surprises that could include. So why don't we start with Kat?
Hi, everybody. It's so nice to see everybody. I skipped a month and I missed everybody terribly. I am calling in from Lyle, Washington, which is where our property is, where we have drugged the Airstream to and where we are camped out. And I was diagnosed a few years ago at the age of 48. And let's see, my Parkinson's last surprised me. You know, we're clearing a bunch of debris from our property, and I keep forgetting that these middle fingers, because of the Botox, don't work very well, and I've jammed my finger a bit. Yeah, so it drags, and I was surprised that even with my gloves on hauling a tree, I was able to jam it pretty good. So I just have to keep it in my brain that my hands don't work the same way, even though I want them to. So I guess that's my last being on the spot there.
Yeah, sorry to put you on the spot. I should say too, I should chime in on this one. Mine is my hands too. Mm-hmm. I was trimming a tree branch and I was like, I all of a sudden I'm in the middle of cutting this branch and I stopped. My arm just doesn't want to do that pulling motion anymore. So I had to switch positions on the ladder. It was lessons learned, you know, always make sure somebody's holding their ladder. Heather, how about you introduce yourself next, please?
Heather Kennedy, coming in from Walnut Creek, California at this time. Wanted to say that it's hard to be a human. Although I don't have anything to compare it to that I know of. And the last time Parkinson's really surprised me was when I was slowed down on purpose by Parkinson's, and I really was mad. I was stumbling around. And I needed to move, and I needed to move fast. And I couldn't. So I walked up and down the street very, very slowly, gingerly, looking like Tim Conway from The Carol Burnett Show. And I met the coolest people. You would not believe what happens when you are slowed down. I would never have done this voluntarily, folks. I like to do things fast. I like to multitask. I'm from New York. I want to go, Like right now, I'm on my meds. I was off my meds. This was a four-hour ordeal. Supposed to be a three-hour tour. But luckily, I had a friend who's here now. And she helped me by making a beat. You know what her beat was? It was Stayin' Alive by the Bee Gees. You can tell by the way. And so it helped me get going again. It only took 3 hours. And she got really tired of singing this song, but she's a great beatboxer now. So that was my big surprise with Parkinson's.
Your friend is a beatboxer. That's a great surprise.
You got it.
Okay, Christy, you're up.
Hi, I'm Christy LaMonica. I live in upstate New York. I'm originally from Connecticut. I was diagnosed in 2020. And what really surprises me, so this one's kind of positive, but I'm really surprised when medicine works, how well it works. You know, so when your meds kick in, how you can go from being like a slow zombie to like alive and functioning and moving really quickly. I'm always amazed every day that works, if it works, when it works.
It's a great surprise too. Okay, Robin, you're up, please.
Robin Moravies from Charlotte, North Carolina, diagnosed in late 2015 at the age of 46, but looking back, symptoms as early as 2003, 2004, in my early 30s. Aside from all the unexpected rando shit that goes wrong with my body, my latest surprise was I was really nervous about my vacation when I went to World Parkinson's Congress because we were spending a month in Europe. And I even talked to my movement disorder specialist about it. I was like, God, I'm really worried about my endurance and my fatigue. And I did not have a problem. I loved every minute of it. I think because it was so different, all the dopamine I had was just charging through my brain. Like 2 days back, I'm so debilitated. I'm like, I have no motivation. I can't walk. My back is thrown. So that's my random surprise.
Yeah, so that's another great surprise. All right, so Kevin, let's get you on the horn here.
Hi everyone, this is Kevin dialing in from Boulder. I'm wearing my Barbie and Ken jacket today because I thought it was such a good movie and so many lessons. So I've been living with Parkinson's now for about 14 years, through that 14 years, like all of you, I've had all the sort of the circling in and out of different symptoms. One of the pleasant surprises, and Chris, you know this, I've mentioned this to you in previous broadcasts. I've been really sort of suffering from really disabling, disfiguring dystonia. And in the past, my hand was almost always locked in this position, which made things like rock steady boxing, riding a bike, holding a ski pole really challenging. But my most pleasant surprise is that I've been working on playing the ukulele for the last month as a form of hand therapy, and I'm getting a little bit of movement back. I'm not going to be doing any concerts real soon. But this...
That was my next question.
No, I'm not playing Red Rocks anytime in the near future. But that forced, just fine motor skill is starting to make it so I can make a fist again, which I love. So anyway, I'm working on the song Creep by Radiohead. It's not coming along very well, but hopefully in the future I'll play it for y'all.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. So, Kevin, you know, you've inspired me a little bit. I picked up my guitar again, and you can maybe see it behind me if you can see that. But it was kind of because of you, I started playing it again, and it's really actually been helpful for me, too. So thanks for helping me in that way. Brian, go ahead and tell us where you're at. And it looks sunny where you are. Oh, you might be muted.
Sorry. Got me now?
Yep.
So I'm in Carson City, Nevada. I've just been moving slowly. I actually got in here about 10 o'clock last night and everything's in boxes. So it was a rush equipment for this. And I've been diagnosed, I think 13, 14 years now. I think a really cool thing that happened unexpectedly, I did this No Barriers Warriors thing in Colorado 2 weeks ago. And they got us up to, we climbed a 20-foot tower and with a belay, and then we get at the edge of the tower and we leap off for this bar, and I get up there and my tremor is just going mad. It's just like, this is crazy insane, and the whole tower, you're on a telephone pole at 20 feet, it's wobbling back and forth. I'm just took a deep breath and I just focused and I locked my muscles as best I could, and I got a standstill. It worked, and then I just bent out, took the leap, didn't make it, but made the leap, and it was awesome. It really surprised me, and everybody was so encouraging. So it was really a cool thing.
That's amazing. Well, talking about vulnerability, which is our topic today, that was a pretty vulnerable position to be in, I guess.
Brian, you're amazing. That's like, I don't have a tremor, but I feel like I'm going to get one just hearing that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. No thanks.
Well, and the whole purpose of this No Barriers Warriors, it's taking people with disabilities, and this time it's veterans, and putting us in a challenging situation. So it worked.
Yeah, well, that's great. I'd love to see a video of that if there was one. That sounds awesome. You're a hero. So today our topic is vulnerability, and you know, I guess I just want to say a couple words at the start about that. I think, you know, vulnerability can be a lot of things, and it can mean a lot of different things for different people. But I think generally it's about being susceptible to risks or you know, potentially some kind of injury. And living with Parkinson's, we are susceptible to that in a variety of ways: physically, new symptoms, changing symptoms, emotionally, fear, anxiety, and socially. You know, we can feel isolated or be isolated, and there's all these different ways that we can be vulnerable. And, you know, I thought that that made this a good topic to sort of talk about. I also wanted to draw attention to the way that it can kind of be a superpower too, and that learning to sort of lean into it can be really helpful too sometimes. And maybe we'll hear all those perspectives from the panel today, and maybe we'll just focus on one or the other, but we'll see where we go. To start us out, I wanted to see if we could maybe talk a little bit about the last time we felt particularly vulnerable or were particularly vulnerable because of Parkinson's. And maybe I'll ask Robin, if you might start us out, just when sometime recently or not recently you felt particularly vulnerable because of Parkinson's.
Sure. I have so many examples, some big ones, some little ones. So I'll start with a little one. But before we do that, I want to give a shout out to Chris from Rocky Gap, Virginia. I see Rocky Gap, Virginia every month on the chat. And I'm like, Rocky Gap, I pass your exit on the turnpike twice a month. I drive between here and Ohio. And whenever I pass the Rocky Gap exit, I think someone lives here who has Parkinson's. So I want to talk about something that recently happened that was kind of scary. We did a bike trip from the Norman coast to Paris along the Seine River. And we had an outfitter that was not very concerned with participant safety, which I've never experienced before. I've never had a tour operator that really didn't care about people's safety and didn't give important ride updates and information. And so part of this route took us across the Le Havre Bridge, which is a really tall bridge. And my partner's terrified of heights, so he wasn't going to do the bridge. He was taking the bus to the destination in this last sort of 12-mile stretch. But I'm not afraid of heights. I am, however, afraid of riding on I-95. And this bike lane was as wide as my handlebars, and semi-trucks were passing within 6 inches of me. And I was being buffeted by the wind, and it was just, I was using every mindfulness skill, every mountain bike handling technique I could, like momentum is your friend. But I was shaking so hard, I started shaking, all four of my limbs started tremoring, and I was afraid that I was going to lose control of my bike, particularly on the downhill, because, I mean, and these trucks, the speed limit was 90 kilometers per hour. And these guy tremoring just talking about this, it's ruined me for bridges forever. But these trucks were sort of screeching by. And I'm not exaggerating how close it was. One of the people one of the riders was on a tandem bike, and she rode in the back, and she took a picture over her shoulder, and she was able to get a picture of a rider with the semi just right there. And it's a trucking lane. And the outfitter didn't tell us that. But as I was coming down on the downhill, I was trying to feather my brakes. But the more that I kind of feathered the brakes and gripped the handlebars, the more my bike was shaking because my body was shaking so badly. I'm just so grateful. I got to the other side of the bridge, and there was a little parking lot off to the side. And, you know, it's always sort of a measured decision-making process whether I'm going to inform people that I have Parkinson's, because I don't want to be identified only as Parkinson's, you know, which can happen. It's just, I never really know what to do. Well, there was no denying it. My whole body was shaking so bad. And these two other riders named Dave and Jenny pulled in behind me and asked if I was okay. And I clearly wasn't. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how I'm going to go on. And I went on, we finished the ride, but we're one and done with that outfitter. We will never book that outfit again. There was other examples too, where he didn't care about safety. He didn't care about food planning. He didn't care about ride info on the route. But that was one time that was really scary for me physically. I think it would have been scary to anyone, but it was hard to control my bike.
Yeah, that sounds like a really challenging moment where, you know, you don't want to necessarily, you're in this tough spot. Do you want to say something about having Parkinson's? Do you not? And then, you know, maybe that's really challenging. I'm sorry you had to go through that. That sounds really tough.
It's horrifying. I lost a very, very close friend.
Riding a bike.
Yeah. So thank you for sharing that. That is terrifying.
I mean, he was sort of downplaying the whole thing. Oh, tons of people right over the bridge. we've never had anything catastrophic happen. I mean, I got back and I told my partner, I said, I can't believe nobody's ever been killed. I mean, I really can't. I just, the only reason nobody has been killed is because it's France and it's a cycling centric culture there. So even the semi truck drivers are sort of, if it was in America, no way. No way.
Thinking about it, like I started shaking while you were talking.
How was that up until the bridge? Was it, was it that terrifying up until the bridge?
No. In fact, you know, when the France is so cycling centric that it was such a pleasure riding for 10 days there. And our outfitter said, don't worry, everyone who passes you on a car, they all ride bikes. Their elderly parents ride bikes. Their small children ride bikes. That was true. I mean, they were so welcoming and so accommodating. So I was not at all afraid about going over the bridge. I'm not afraid of heights. And I was the one who asked, he said, are there any questions? I said, is there a designated bike lane? Because it had been so wonderful up to that point that I thought, okay, well, you know, they'd been going around and it was fine. It was not fine. There were, he said, oh yeah, there's a designated bike lane. It was about as wide as my handlebars.
Robin, I think this topic behooves us going deeper, because there is a fine line between pushing the limits beyond what you're comfortable doing to get over your vulnerability and going to a place which could endanger yourself.
Interesting. That's interesting.
We've all been there, right? We all sort of, as mavericks of our world, want to push the limits to the next level.
In my defense, had he said, it's like riding your bike on I-95, I would not have gone. I would have gotten on the bus. But he didn't. So I didn't know. I just thought, okay, I'm not afraid of heights. I'll ride this bridge.
Yeah.
So I'm saying that in my defense. But to your point, Kevin, you're totally right, because I do that.
Yeah. You know, I think part of living well with Parkinson's for me personally is pushing the limits. You know, setting something which I know will be a push goal, right? And to me, that's the joy that I get. But when I hear a story like that, or a story of the kid in Boulder here that recently got run down on Diagonal Highway, it says to me that maybe we can't live in fear, but at the same time, we have to exercise caution when necessary.
Yeah. I'd love to piggyback that a little bit. So I'm a risk taker in many ways, but I'm not really a physical risk taker. And I've learned that. I pre-Parkinson's, with Parkinson's, I'm just not. And so while I agree in pushing ourselves some and having goals, I also think that we aren't invincible. None of us here are invincible. And so for me, getting on a bicycle on, well, I love the idea of cycling stationary or inside, I really am fearful about traffic and those kinds of things. So even pre-Parkinson's is not something that I would do. And so I just, the idea of it makes me feel hugely vulnerable. But I do think it's an interesting distinction, because we're all really encouraged to get out and get moving and do the exercise we're comfortable with. And just by doing that, though, it can put us in a vulnerable situation. Just getting out and taking a walk some days can put us in a vulnerable situation. You know, Heather, your story about, you know, not kind of getting stuck and being frozen, and how beautiful that you were able to take that time, which I'm sure felt super vulnerable, to say, this is really not very comfortable, but gosh, there is some silver lining to that. And
everybody's staring.
Yeah, everybody's staring. That social vulnerability of nothing like feeling different in the moment. Nothing like, Anyway, I just really wanted to acknowledge that. And Robin, I am so glad you're safe. I would. You're crazy, but I'm so glad you're safe.
The harrowing tale, Robin. And as I was listening to it, I was just thinking, just because when I get nervous, my tremor goes worse, and that would make it even more challenging. And that you got through that, I think speaks a lot to how committed you are to the goal.
Well, and Brian, I was going to speak on something else, and Chris had emailed me because I have to leave the call early. So Chris had emailed me to say, can I lead with you and ask you this question? So I had thought and thought and thought about it, and I had a different example. But when you talked about getting up on that pole and shaking so bad, I was like, oh my God, how could I not talk about this?
Well, you were awesome to get through that. That just sounds, I was like, listening to it. It's a harrowing experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think to Kevin's point, you know, I think one thing that's important is, you know, one way in which we're vulnerable, at least I feel this way. I shouldn't speak for everybody. I just have my own experience, obviously. But, you know, I often feel like I got to think very carefully about what I'm going to do and really map out the things that I'm going to do. And obviously I don't mean to criticize you, Robin. You have to take the information you have, and that's all you can do. And you tried, but, you know, I just think that one way that we have to be careful, or at least I feel I do, is just making sure that I understand as best I can the situation I'm getting into. And even then, you can only get so much information. So just kind of be willing to.
Like the fact that you said you're on a ladder, whatever, cutting down something, to me, that's like, no, I have to like check myself when I want to get on the ladder to do something around my house. I have to just be like, oh, wait, no, I can wait for someone else to do that. I don't have to be on the ladder because I'm the last person we want up on the ladder. Because it might not end well. It might, but it might not. So I have to make that effort to like check myself at and doing the stuff I want to.
What could possibly go wrong? Ladder crossing. I had to give up on my knife throwing and, you know.
What could possibly go right with all that, you know?
Roller skates are definitely out for me.
It sounds like we need to have a like week-long gathering of everything ridiculous that we can do as Parkies.
Get all out of the way, away from our families, so it's safe.
Okay, so I wasn't diagnosed yet, you guys. This is, okay, we're going to be a little off topic, but I was sort of, well, I was totally going midlife, kind of midlife crisis. And I, in college, rode a scooter, okay? And I loved my scooter. And I was thinking, what's fun? I could go to my deliveries, you know, zoom out of the house with my scooter on, midwife on a scooter to the hospital, right? Super practical. So I test drove this Vespa. It was a friend of mine's Vespa. And it's one of the early examples of where my balance was really different. So I test drove the Vespa and didn't speed up enough and tipped it over and crashed, broke my collarbone. So that was, my husband's like, I don't think you should buy the Vespa. I was like, yeah, probably not a good idea. But that was a good example of feeling like that was a vulnerability, right? And then it wiped me out for 3 months. I couldn't work for 3 months because I couldn't catch babies with one hand. They're slippery when they first come out.
Before I was diagnosed, I tried to go roller skating. And I used to do speed skating when I was a kid. So I was really good at roller skating.
Yeah, but, and it brings joy, right? We wanted joy.
But I tried and I was like, I need to hold on to a wall because I don't have balance. Of course, that was before I was diagnosed too. I was holding on to my friend's 5-year-old at the time because I figured, you know, he'll bounce back if he falls. Slippery people still.
But those, I actually, Christy, did similar things to you. So I... That balance thing. So I'm happy to get on a bike as long as it's stationary. I don't have to balance it. Ladders are out, roller skates are out, and high heels.
They're all in Poshmark.
Yeah.
Even kid heels. No heels.
No heels.
Not even like kitten ones that are 2 inches or an inch and a half, too much. I'll fall over.
Well, related to what I was saying on the back end about telling people I have Parkinson's, going more into social vulnerability, someone in the chat, it looks like maybe Gabe, or I don't have the full name, is going to a 40th high school reunion and is struggling to let people know that they've been diagnosed with PD. So have any of you guys struggled with, should I tell, shouldn't I tell? Because sometimes nobody can tell based on my symptoms presentation externally. And that was a goal for me on this trip, is I really didn't want to tell because I just wanted to go and enjoy my bike. And I told not everybody, but a couple people.
Well, if you can get away with it, why tell? I mean, I knew I couldn't get away with it for very long, so I told pretty much everybody. You know, so they wouldn't be like, is she drunk? Is she, did she have a stroke in the last 5 minutes? What happened to her? She just went to the bathroom, now she can't walk.
I don't understand. My fluctuations like are so wild like that. So I totally understand.
You were just walking. What happened to you? Did you fall, bump your head? I just got tired of explaining all the other scenarios that could come up. So I just said, you know what? It's just Parkinson's, folks. It's going to be okay. Brian Grant has a funny story. He gets in an elevator and he's all like, you know, because he's like super dyskinetic one time. And he's like, I scared a lot of people. I'm like, yeah, I scared people when I got in elevators too. You know, he's 6 foot, you know, 12 almost, you know, he's just like, he's like, it's okay. It's just Parkinson's. Because everyone's sort of like, So good.
Kevin's been wanting to jump in. Kev.
Yeah, Robin, my personal view on that is that if you do tell people at your reunion, you actually may find that it will open up channels of a stronger relationship that you might not have had you had the veneer in front of you. So, listen to me. For the first 4 years of work, I didn't say anything either. But I found more benefits to being open. People will come up to me with encouragement, will open up channels for speaking engagements or other things because of that openness in there. And you got to figure that people will figure it out anyway. We all have quirkinesses about us, even when we were normal, pre-diagnosed. But these quirkiness attributes come out so much more now, right? Mm-hmm. That's my 2 cents worth.
I find if you handle things with humor. So, you know, I debated whether to share it with the staff or not. And when I did, I just made jokes about it. I just said, you guys know I've always been a mover and a shaker. Now it just shows more. And you just find ways to kind of be disarming. And then people are a lot more receptive, you know. To me, that end has worked. I had another part to that, but I forgot it. So
it's Parkinson's, Brian.
Putting together those two things that Kevin and Brian just noted, that's sort of what I was thinking about when I thought about the superpower of vulnerability. You know, being open with people can sort of be disarming to people who you might tell, and then it can open up possibilities like Kevin was describing. So, you know, that's been my experience personally as well, that it has been helpful, actually, and a lot of people turn around and tell me, I've known my grandmother or, you know, my friend Bob or, you know, whomever. And that then opens up a new phase of a type of way to interact with that person, which has been good for me.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think even though Parkinson's may increase the opportunities for us to be vulnerable, maybe I'm being, I don't know what the word is, like too positive about that. Everybody is vulnerable sometimes. I have found, like you, Chris and Kevin, that people tend to be compassionate. But Robin, I understand that, though, that feeling of not wanting to be othered or different or seen differently. And sometimes I'll handle that and say, listen, I want you to know that I have Parkinson's. There may be some symptoms that come up, and I'm telling you not because I want to be treated in any differently, but because I want you to know in case I'm symptomatic or in case if I ask for an accommodation or special help. And that's something that maybe for me, I might have shared with the guide or the person taking you so that they knew. But then you can tell them you wanted to choose to disclose or not disclose. I don't know.
Yeah, I did have to tell the outfitter, but yeah. My whole thing wasn't about being different or othered. It's more just that's the continuous identity. And I'm so much more than my Parkinson's.
Of course you are.
And I don't want that to be the sole focus. because I'm not too worried about being othered or whatever, but I don't know.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk about the emotional vulnerability part. I have a lot of stories about the physical, including the emergency department, which is a whole nother thing. We'll have to spend hours on what happens to Parkinson's patients in the emergency room. The quality of being sort of like exposed or being attacked or being afraid is what's normally associated with vulnerable. What I'm going to say is our strength is in our vulnerability. It's like where the light gets in. It's those cracks. You know, they all, Lenny Cohen, the light.
Yep. Leonard Cohen.
Mm-hmm. Cracks where the light gets in. I call him Lenny. You know, we go way back, Kat.
Just like, I figured.
Kind of like I had Bobby De Niro for dinner the other night in my mind. Robert De Niro's waiting. But in all seriousness, I was supposed to do this great karaoke night. And I went up to take the mic and there was going to be some people there, including the person who wrote the song. And they were like talking me up on stage because I used to sing and my meds go off in that instant. And I go tripping up the stairs and they all started laughing because they thought that I was doing some kind of a sight gag, which I would have done back in the day. Somebody's laughing. And I go up there and I go, can I sing a different song to start? So I chose a different song, which was also by this person, by the way. And I started doing another song and then I ended up doing this other song, which is called, let's just say it's by Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats. And it starts with my hands were shaking, my heart was breaking, there's bugs crawling over me, and it ended up working out perfectly. And they still didn't really know what was going on at the time. So people are sort of looking like, what is up with her? She seems kind of odd. And I never said anything while I was up there, but guess what? It's the perfect song for Parkies, okay? So it's called SOB. Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats. Just remember, you can always sort of like adapt. Adaptation is the name of the game. And if you need to be vulnerable, I'm thinking emotionally, so what? What have you got to lose emotionally? In Robin's case, or in the case of people, you know, having some physical threat, well, that's a totally different thing. I'm not talking about that, but emotionally, go ahead and, you know what? You only live once. Let's do this thing.
I want to jump into the chat for a quick second because a couple minutes ago, somebody mentioned that they play golf and it's getting worse every time they play. And the question was asked, where is the line that tells me that I can no longer risk looking ridiculous or making others uncomfortable? And I think that relates to what you're just saying, Heather. So I wonder if anybody has any perspectives on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think first and foremost, we are not responsible for everybody else's reactions. I think that is really important. I think that if one feels uncomfortable or unsafe doing an activity, that's one thing. But I don't think we have to be responsible for everybody else's reactions. For one thing, we don't always, human beings do not always read other people's reactions the way that they're intended. Communication is so complicated. And I think that if you're loving golf, go golf all you want. I will tell you, I would be horrible. I don't golf. I would be so embarrassed golfing, but if I felt like doing it, I would go. And I would just tell people I'm no good at this, or I have Parkinson's or whatever, but I really encourage you not to give something up that is bringing you joy or that you love doing, being worried about other people. Is that fair? Or too strong?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's perfect.
Kev.
Yeah. You know, along the same lines of that question and what Steve Quam asked in the chat is, what happens when you just feel like you can't do it, you push the envelope anymore? And the thing that I would say is tying to what you said, Kat, is that we cannot hold ourselves to the standards of what we used to be able to do. The key is a standard reset. And there's joy if you reset it and then do something. So I'll give you an example. I used to love to ski moguls. If I skied a mogul now, I would die for sure in there. But I could ski groomers as better than I used to be able to before. it doesn't come like that overnight. It you have to identify and accept that you can't do certain things. And then what you have to do, for in my case, is spend a lot of time dedicated to trying to turn that weakness of, in this case, my balance. I spend at least 30% of every gym day standing on one leg, you know, doing all kinds of dual tasking. And in that way, when I do get back on the mountain, there's joy in being out there again. And I'm assuming that I've got that window for about a couple of years left, hopefully more, but then you'll have to reset again, right? And so it's really sort of this shedding the denial is so important.
And I want to add on to that, because I'm going to have to jump here soon, to what Kat said too in this whole topic, is there's a slogan that it's none of my business what other people think of me. And that's good. And it's really hard to apply when you're feeling really self-conscious and different. But that may help someone out there, is that it's none of our business what other people think of us.
Well, and I would echo what Kevin said, the idea of the used to's, that'll beat you up badly. And if you look back at it, you just think back in life, you know, when I was a kid, I used to be able to put my foot behind my head. You know, I'm not going to do that now. Life evolves, life changes. You got to let go of the used to's and you got to look at what you can do now. And like, I used to golf and I had like I could easily shoot under 100, and now, you know, it'd probably be 140. But if I went out to golf now, I wouldn't compare myself to what I used to be. I'd say, wow, I did pretty well. I hit some good 50 yarders or 75 yarders, or, you know, which would have killed the old me. But you've got to look at the new you and set your new bar. Reset. I think Kevin said that also.
How's that going with dates, Brian?
What's that?
How does that foot thing behind that go on your dates?
The foot thing on the dates? I don't go on dates.
Oh, man. I don't know. Don't do that.
Yeah, you do.
Good answer. Good answer, Brian.
I haven't.
Christy, you had your hand up. I want to hear what you have to say. So,
to add on to everything, so Robin, I just, not my circus, not my monkeys. So that, I think we all need that like tattooed on something. But I think that what can you do with golf? So if you're playing, how many holes are there?
18.
Can you play like less than that? You know, like why not just change it to what you can do and just be okay with that? Who cares what everyone else is doing?
Or play basketball or do something else.
Yeah. Right.
There is another layer to that, though, which is just the sort of emotional feeling that, you know, now I've got to give this thing up. I'm already taking these medications I didn't want to take or didn't plan to take. Now I've got this emotional side. So I wonder if anybody has any perspective. It's all great advice to think about what you can do today. But what about the emotional side? How can we navigate that? Yeah, Kat.
So I have a thought. Giving up my job with a Parkinson's diagnosis was a really, really difficult thing. And I still to this day miss it. But I've tried to learn the term, it's somebody else's turn. I feel so grateful that I had a turn getting to deliver babies. And I feel so grateful that I got to meet all these wonderful people and do all of these things. And because of my life, which includes Parkinson's, I am no longer doing that job. And it's somebody else's turn. It doesn't mean that I don't feel loss. But even like somebody else mentioned, the process of aging is a process of slowly letting go and evolving and needing to reset. I believe that with a chronic disease, we get the opportunity to perhaps learn sooner what that letting go is like. And it's not always graceful. Sometimes it's messy. Sometimes it means we trip and break bones. Sometimes it means we push further than maybe we should have pushed. But I think the alternative is that we sit inside and we build a bubble around ourselves that is not healthy. We get isolated. We don't move our bodies. We are fearful. We judge everything by, are our symptoms coming? Are they not coming? And for me, I go to the worst place, the case scenario. You know, the worst case scenario is I could go and maybe I'm embarrassed, or maybe my meds go off, or maybe I can't finish or do it the way I used to, but I'm showing up, and darn it, showing up builds points. Whoever's keeping score, that's, I just have to believe that. And I have to keep believing it and keep taking the jump of faith. And even though I didn't get the mascara on because I can't get the hands together, and even though my hair's dirty, or even because my, I don't have water on the property, I'm showing up, you know, dang it. I I brushed my teeth today. Yeah, that's a win.
You may not have water, but you have high speed internet.
I do.
Clean teeth.
Yeah. I can, yeah. I don't know.
Looking good, Kat. It's all good.
The story about the emotional vulnerability, that's a hard one to share, but I think it's important. It's one that popped in my mind when Chris first started talking about this. But about a year and a half after my wife died, my father went into hospice care. And I got down there the day after he was sent to hospice, and he said, "Hey, everything's fine. I've lived a good life." He was 90. He says, "I'm just going to have fun. You know, I'm here with my family, everybody I love. This is all that matters." I was the only one of the kids who could stay home at his house and take care of him. And through the night, it got to be where I wasn't sleeping and I wasn't taking my meds well. And his last day before he went in, he slipped into a coma. I was totally off meds. My emotions were all over the place. I hollered at my sister, who had done something negative to my father the day before. Then I was out in the patio and everybody was going in to say goodbye to him and just be with him. And I couldn't move. I was frozen. And the family didn't understand that. And then my two sisters came out and they were being real sympathetic, and that just made it worse. And emotions just went all over. So there's a really hard time, and nobody understood the Parkinson's. And I think, I don't know how to get through that one, you know, doing it again. I would just try to communicate better. But I think many of us have said family doesn't like to talk about Parkinson's. They don't like to deal with some of the things that happen. So this is an extreme thing, and emotions are all over the place for everyone, period. And then, you know, not taking your meds, not sleeping well, losing your father who you love very dearly, and being there. But we had lots of humor in, towards the end. But it's more than just the vulnerability of having the Parkinson's. It's the Parkinson's making the vulnerabilities worse. So it was a real challenge. And I still have family members that won't talk to me now because they thought I was such a mess. They think I'm an emotional ruin.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that can happen, right? That is maybe not only limited to family either. You can lose connections because of this to family, to friends, to like Kat was saying, to employers and that relationship. And actually, you know, I don't want to zoom away from that, but I just want to acknowledge that I saw a comment previously, earlier in the chat, from Sharon asking or describing a circumstance where they were pushed out of their work, which is, you know, obviously a different sort of situation, but it's in the same category as what you're describing, Brian, where people just see this thing and they just don't want to look at it, and that can be really challenging. So. It's socially isolating. So what do we do about that, right? I mean, you're socially isolated from your work or from your friends or from your family. And as Brian described, what do we do?
That's exactly right. No. And I don't know.
Yeah. And I think it's all, there are all those risks. You know, there's not, we say things like, well, we've got the American with Disabilities Act in the United States. The reality is, though, that people do fear for their jobs. And there are people that are getting marginalized and pushed out of positions because they have a disability. So I wish that I had like the perfect answer. Don't we all, right? Mm-hmm. Don't we all? And I think we have to dig deep and feel and do what's comfortable for us. And And I think there's an element of grief and loss. And I think there's also an element of like that reset, Kevin, that you were talking about, trying to be honest with yourself about even what do I want and what do I feel like my limits are? And can I take care of myself in this moment? Brian, like you, you know, can I take care of my dad if I'm really not taking my medicines and taking care of myself? And we're all presented with those challenges every day. And they're hard. And I don't want to minimize how hard this stuff is, because I know we're kind of making light and pushing each other up, but it's hard to feel vulnerable, and it's hard to change, and it's hard to lose. But I do think that if we can look at it honestly and grieve and be sad, and then try to move past it, whether it's reaching out to other people, whether it's finding a support group, whether it's starting medication for depression, whether it's, you know, making a move, leaving a relationship, starting a relationship. You know, I wish that there was the answer, but I think it's part of the journey is that this is hard stuff. And it's also worth it. If you can get to the mountain and the valleys, I'm sorry, I'm preachy today. Goodness, turn me off. I'm muting myself.
Sound great. Keep it up.
You're not preachy at all. I think you hit the nail on the head here. You know, I think the one thing is we're everyone on this panel, one of the attributes that I love about all of you is I know each and every one of you has your dark days. We all do. But the key is somehow we've all been able to find our own way to get out, be it exercise, be it in our writing, be it in our socializing with other people. We find our own way. I'd like to share my most recent period of vulnerability, which happened 2 days ago. So I attended the local picnic here for the Boulder Support Group, and it was held at this gathering where there were about 40 or 50 people, which is a great turnout. And in the first few minutes of the event, they announced the names of the people that were no longer with us, and we had a quiet moment. And that list was really long. And that really kind of hit home for me that this is not funny stuff that we're living right now. And I was texting Davis after this event saying, this really has bummed me out, you know, and there. I think it's all the more reason, you know, we were sort of saying to each other, that, you know, we are doing very well. The people on this panel, we have our hardships, but somehow through the group interaction with all of us, we've been able to sort of hoist each other up in there. And I think the theme that the Davis Finney Foundation so stresses, right, is living quality life today, and that's either riding your bike or doing whatever you can to find joy and quality. It gets harder as we progress. And that's all the more reason this is a muscle, or Chris, as you call it, a superpower that we've got to really hone in and develop now. So I'm also getting preachy, Kat, But this topic warrants getting preachy, because we really need to be put ourselves out there, be vulnerable, admit that we have this sucky thing in our life, and try to somehow find some joy in all of it, right?
Yeah, it's a crap hand. Christy was
going to. Yesterday was actually one of my really vulnerable days too. So Kevin, it's interesting to hear that yours was 2 days ago. Mine was yesterday. So I went off at like 10:15 in the morning. Don't know why. My med should have lasted a little bit longer, but I did. We had to get two socially inept dogs to the vet for their checkup and not fun. So I can barely get my clothes on. I got some clothes on, got a sports bra on because the real bra wasn't working. Put my slippers on because I couldn't get my sneakers on fast enough to get into the car. And my meds didn't come back on all day until about 6 o'clock at night. So I had to go with my husband to take the two socially inept dogs to the vet and function while at the vet, while shuffling all around at a snail's pace and figure out how to pay the bill and all sorts of things that I would have normally stayed home. I would have never gone out into public like that because, I mean, I wonder what everyone thought. Did I look like I was drunk? Did I look like I had a stroke? Do they even know what happened? Or do they know, you know, what's, it was really tough being outside my comfort zone for that long. Yeah. Yesterday.
May I mention something about comfort zones? Oh, Robin, you gotta go. Okay, bye, Robin. It was good to see you. I'm glad you stayed so long.
I'm glad you're alive.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, right on.
You meet over the bridge.
I wanted to say something about being uncomfortable. We have to get really uncomfortable to love. Let's face it, loving requires deep vulnerability. Beyond right doing and wrong doing, there's a field. I'll meet you there. I have to drop all my stuff and try to compromise. It's not easy. Love is hard. And love requires intimacy and vulnerability and deep honesty about who we really are. And we have to really, that mirror's right in your face. So there's nothing better than vulnerability, in my opinion. I love being disabused of my illusions of self. I love being removed of my illusions of how things are supposed to be. That is the deeper lesson here that I learned from Parkinson's, unfortunately, the hard way. I'm a slow learner. I had to go dragged. So there's that too.
There's an element of spirituality to what you're saying too, right? I mean, that overlaps somewhat, right? Just coming to a deeper sense of peace or however you get there, that seems related to what you're saying to me.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the main importance that we all agree on, and Kevin, Kat were actually touching upon this, but it's a community. It's a community of people that you can trust with. To me, that's your family. That's the people that, you know, be it people with Parkinson's, which I find you can easily just break all the barriers down and you're, that's why I love these conferences. Everybody's just themselves. There's none of that bullshit. And when I was with the disabled vets, it's like I felt a community there and I could talk about things. And that's what you need to find is as you hit all these hard points, these times that just crush you, you have to find that group that you can share it with, that group that you can be honest with, that you can open up and feel normal with.
Yeah, and I think we can't underscore that there may be people listening that feel like they don't have a community or don't have people, but we can be your people. And there's you know, the Davis-Finney Foundation has a great ambassador program, and there may be an ambassador in your area. There may be groups that you can attend. I mean, I wish again that we had all the answers here today. I wish them most for myself, and I wish them for all of us. But don't, if you're feeling alone, reach out. You know, log on, show up. You know, be brave. You know, it's worth it. Like Heather put in the chat, you know, some of these people saved her life. I feel the same way. I feel like this foundation found me at a very, very low point when I was transitioning out of a career that I adored and felt very lost, and gave me an avenue to pursue a philosophy that I inherently believe, which is that we can live well or be well, no matter what. And it's the story we tell ourselves that is the most important story. So maybe we need to think about changing the stories we're telling ourselves. Anyway, I feel so privileged to be here. And thank you for letting me go on and on today, you guys.
New day is a new day too. So
new day.
Today's a bad day. If today's a bad day, don't quantify. Don't say it's a bad day. Just say it's a day. And the next day it can only get better.
Yes, everything is finite. Kat, you're still giving birth to many things. Now they're just projects and books and helping. You're always
hopefully water. and septic, you know.
You're always in service, so thank you. Kat and Ken Hill have been very active in many things, including the WPC and Davis Finney, and we're just really appreciating their presence. Thank you. And Kevin, everyone here, thank you so much.
Yeah, so we're coming up on the end of our time, and it's really, I feel like I should jump in and just say that we're, you know, I personally am grateful for being welcomed into this community and being and welcomed into this call so
principally.
But also for all the ambassadors and for the viewers of the webinar and for all the contributions that people make to make this community really thrive. And so I'm so glad that everybody was able to join us today. I'm so glad for the panel's, you know, honesty and candor. And we're just really glad everybody was able to join us. And you know, I look forward to seeing you at our next meetup, which will be, I believe, Thursday, September 21st. And you know, that'll be here around the corner. And in the meantime, I think Sam has put in the chat that if you have any questions for us, you know, you can find the ambassadors on the website, but you can also email us at blog@dpf.org if you have any questions or if we can help in any way. So please don't hesitate to reach out. And thanks again for your time. And we look forward to seeing you next month.
Don't feel alone, anybody. Please reach out to us.
And we have 3 minutes. And so to end, Heather, you want to send us off with a little song?
You're not going to believe who it was. Oh. You ready for this? Can I say a bad word in the song?
I don't know. I don't care.
This is I'm getting tired of your shit. Oh, you don't ever bomb in nothing. You know, sings that song? Well, she was there. And I was like, oh, my God. Every time you come around, you got to bring Jim, James, Kevin, and Brian.
There you go.
All I know is
going up, like we said. Yeah.
I'm not a singer.
Baloney.
Yeah, right. Question.
But if I had been, like Linda Ronstadt, I might have been a little bummed out. In other words, we can do what we can do right now. Everything is finite. Enjoy the moment. Enjoy the sandwich, you know, go for it.
Nothing. And look up Slim Shaky. It'll make you smile.
Yes.
It's a great video. They call me Slim Shaky.
I stand up, you want to feel shaky. Call me Shaky. Slim.
Slim.
I like Joni's lines when it's like, forget it. Yeah. I've got grandkids to meet, you know. That's Sequoia Lowe. He did that when he was in high school. See, yep. We can do anything, guys.
Yeah.
We're only here once.
Yep. That's right. Thank you, Chris, for leading us through this. This was a tough one. So we all survived.
We made it.
And we brainstormed together too.
We do. We have a good record of surviving.
Yeah.
Right? Good point, Christy.
Every day, 100%.
Yeah.
We survived 100%.
That's the only thing that we're 100% at, right?
Great shirt, Kevin.
So. And Kevin's killing the Ken jacket.
Oh, yeah.
Ken would love that. That's my husband's name. So, but I am not Barbie. We'll leave on that note.
I like the pink.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Love you.
Bye.